I spent a year doing tons of construction during the day. As soon as I got off work, I'd go shower, and then I would just build this sort of writing shop. And at the time, I was just a freelancer. And a little at a time, it sort of blossomed into a full-blown like freelance writing business, which today is called Honeycop. That was sort of how I built it early on.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I show you that you don't have to be a natural born entrepreneur to build a business that gives you time freedom, location freedom, and financial freedom. My name is Ryan Helms, and in just 27 months, I paid off over $209,000 in debt, quit my 9-to-5 job, and started building my dream business that scaled to 6 figures of income in less than 6 months. And on this podcast, I'll be sharing exactly how I did it and bring on some awesome guests that are either doing it or have already done the same thing. So if you're a freedom chaser and you want to fast track that process, this is the podcast for you. And also, be sure to head over to gritandhustle.co to grab your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal. But for now, let's hop in to today's episode. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. As always, I'm bringing you guys awesome guests that are outside of the box, not that you're probably hearing on all these other entrepreneur podcasts. And today I have another one of those great guests for you. His name is Cole. Cole, why don't you take 2 seconds, introduce yourself a little bit more formally, and kind of give us a little insight into kind of where you were and where you're at now and what happened in between.
Yeah, for sure. Well, for one, I'm real excited to be on here. My name is Cole Schaefer. I'm 25 years old. I run a creative writing shop. It's called Honey Copy, and I work with startups on basically writing words that don't suck to read. a lot of the emails we're getting nowadays and blog posts we're reading and website copy, it can be rough to read, and it's full of buzzwords and jargon. And so my job is to kind of come in and really try to write the most interesting thing that their customers will read all day. That's sort of my goal. But I'll go ahead and kind of rewind a little bit and talk about my journey. I graduated from the University of Southern Indiana back in 2016 with a degree in marketing. And I did what every other, you know, college graduate does. And that's, I went out and got a full-time job at this really tiny advertising agency in my hometown. And I was like a month into that. And I remember being at my desk and just thinking, I sort of had a panic attack where I was like, if I have to do this for the rest of my life, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I just literally that day, like right when I was having that panic attack, I got up, it was like 2:00. I grabbed my backpack and I just walked out of the office. Which I don't advise people to do. That's definitely like 100% rude to do and all that. And my boss wasn't there, so it wasn't like I left a meeting or anything, but I just walked out and I went home and did like a ton of reflection. And the next day I walked into the office and sat down with my boss and just let her know, hey, you know, I just can't do this anymore. I want to put in my 2 weeks. And so from there I just knew that like, while I didn't want to necessarily have like a 9-to-5 job, and I say 9-to-5 job, I don't mean to make that sound like it's wrong or anything like that, but I just realized like I wanted a lot of freedom. And for me early on, freedom looked like sort of making my own schedule. And when I was working, like if I was working 60 hours a week, making sure that those hours were being spent building something of my own rather than building something for someone else. And so I had always had a passion for writing. I had no idea what that looked like in the business sense, but I just started emailing a ton of different startups just saying, hey, do you need help writing your blog posts? Do you need help writing your emails? And I was literally sending out 100 to 200 cold emails every single week, just like lighting people up. And I would do that sort of like in the evenings, and during the day, I actually got a job tearing out carpet. And so I actually have like a really funny story there, but when I left the advertising agency, I started working for this construction company tearing out carpet. And what was hilarious was the advertising agency actually hired the construction company to come in and tear out their carpet. So literally, yeah.
You had to go in there?
Oh man, I had to go in. I was like in a cutoff boots, sweating my ass off. I can literally see my colleagues, like my ex-colleagues, like right beside me as I'm tearing out carpet. And they're probably looking at me like, this dude is crazy, you know? So I'm tearing out carpet. And that was pretty much like the lowest point, like in my entrepreneurial journey. But I had an epiphany kind of like right in that moment where I thought, you know, I think that the pain of having to sit in the office was actually worse than the embarrassment of going back into that office and tearing out carpet. And I kind of knew in that moment that I was like choosing the right kind of pain. But anyway, so I spent a year just doing tons of construction during the day. As soon as I got off work, I'd go shower, and then I would just build this sort of writing shop. And at the time, I was just a freelancer. And a little at a time, it sort of blossomed into a full-blown like freelance writing business, which today is called Honey Copy. And I've since launched like a lot of different products to kind of supplement the service income, you know, which I can get into. But that was sort of how I built it early on.
Nice. So do you think to get to the part where you pursued writing as a business, did you have to leave that agency to have that evolution? I mean, because you could have, in theory, did exactly what you did while staying at that agency and doing it at night, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So I think that I know freelancers and entrepreneurs, like they'll answer this question differently. And I kind of think it heavily depends on the person, right? So like there's some people who I think have the personality to keep the day job and then at night kind of build up their little side hustle to where it blossoms into like a full-blown business, right? But then there's other people like me who have a very risky sort of personality, and I kind of needed to burn my ships at the shore to give me that fire in my belly to go out and start it. You know, and yeah, I think it just really depends. For me specifically, yeah, I definitely needed to quit my job. I kind of needed to have that kick in the ass of being in the agency, tearing out carpet, going into these super hot, nasty apartment buildings, doing that to see what my alternative was. And yeah, so I think I needed it. I don't think that like everyone has to go that extreme, you know?
That's cool. So when you started reaching out and you started, 100, 200 emails, you know, per week, what were you saying to these people when you were reaching out to them?
Yeah, man, absolutely. So one thing I learned early on, and I talk about this a ton now, like in my copywriting course I launched, but it's just focus on the subject line, you know, first. So if you can't write a good subject line or a good headline, you know, you're really not going to get anyone to read the rest of your copy, whether that's an email or a blog post or a sales page. So I would just like kick it off with something really out there. You know, one that worked really well for me was just, I found your pin. And it was, something they didn't really expect, but at the same time, it wasn't like so out there that it didn't make sense. It kind of tied into like, you know, I'm a writer, pin, all that. But yeah, that got some really nice open rates. And then from there, you know, early on, I felt like I was probably more spammy, but when I sort of turned from copy and pasting the same message to everyone to personalizing it, like realizing, hey, there's a human on the other side of this, all of a sudden my response rates like really skyrocketed. And I talk about this a lot, like just in marketing in general, but I think it just really comes down to being thoughtful, you know, just caring enough to do a little research on that person, finding something in common, seeing like a recent achievement like their company made or like a cool product launch or a piece of advertising you dug, and just like bring it up in the email. And so, yeah, generally it would just start out, I would always be like, you know, what's up, Dave? I'm really digging what you're doing at, you know, fill in the blank company. I read this article a little while back that you guys put out. It's really, really neat. Then I would like tie it into maybe what they weren't doing currently. So I was like, you know, that was super helpful. Why aren't you guys still putting out that type of content? you know, or, hey, I really, really dug like your landing page that you did for this product. But have you ever thought about testing out a shorter landing page with less copy? So kind of complimenting them, but then also like putting out a question, not to highlight like an insecurity, but just try to poke it like maybe something they could be doing better, you know?
Nice. So before even getting to those emails, like you said that like writing was something that you were, you know, somewhat good at, but you never thought about it from a business standpoint. How did you come to the realization in your head that, okay, like I can write and yeah, somebody will probably pay me money for this as well. Like what happened there? Because I think a lot of people are good at a lot of things that people would pay them for. They just don't realize it yet. So how did you come to that?
Yeah, man. Great question. So, you know, I think like with writing in general, the sort of widely held belief is that the only way you can make money as a writer is by writing novels, which in reality, I would guess that the vast majority of people do not get very rich like writing books or like even make a living writing books. And so I had sort of throughout college, you know, people would read some of the things I was putting out there, whether they were just like little blog posts, and they would say, damn, this is like pretty good. And when I sort of began to notice that like strangers were saying that. And I think more than that, writing was this thing that I kept coming back to. You know, I would go out and try to start this like t-shirt business once and it failed. And how I made sense of that is I came back to the page, right? So like one thing I try to tell people when it comes to starting a business is maybe find something that like, or at least a service business, find something that you like keep coming back to, whether that's writing or whether that's music, you know, and like music, for example, doesn't have to necessarily be you putting out songs. It could just be you working with artists on promoting them or being like a marketer where you're building their brand or whatever. But I just tell people to come back to stuff that they find themselves returning to over and over again and see if you can't turn that into a business. But I had no idea what copywriting was when I was first emailing people, which a lot of people don't. They think it's like something to do with law, you know,
right?
The legal system, you know. So I don't even tell people I'm a copywriter.
What is that? So for the people that may also be clueless, like you were at one point, what is copywriting in your words?
Yeah, man. So copywriting is essentially selling products and services with words. That's all it is. It's I view it as you and I being face to face. If I were to try to sell you a product, like sell you a refrigerator, the only difference between that and copywriting is that I can essentially multiply that by 100 and 1,000 and 100,000 people. And I still try to have that one-on-one conversation where I'm selling you a refrigerator, but instead of it just being to you, I'm selling it to hundreds of people. So essentially copywriting allows you to just replicate the sales process in the written form.
Got it. So at some point during that process, it sounds like maybe while you were blasting out all these emails, you realized what copywriting was. How did you start to develop that skill, or was it something that you just naturally had?
Yeah, great question. So funny enough, like cold emailing is a great copywriting practice because you can see firsthand what works and what doesn't. You know, people will email you back and say, you're a dumbass. Like I can tell that was a spam email, or some of them just won't respond. And then other people will say, hell yeah, like let's get on a call. And so you can see firsthand the emails that work and the ones that don't. So for any entrepreneur or marketer, I think cold emailing is just a great practice because it teaches you to sort of see what triggers people to buy or hop on a call or download whatever it is you want them to download, et cetera. So that was like the first sort of way I learned copywriting. But from there, you know, I became familiar with these really great copywriters like David Ogilvy and Joseph Sugarman and Gary Halbert. And all of a sudden I was just like reading some of these guys and I was like, oh shit, this is what I do, you know, it's copywriting. And from there, it was just a deep dive into everything I could learn on copywriting. And, you know, writers, Stephen King has a great quote out there, but it's just that if you don't have time to read, you don't have time to write, period. So, you know, I try like this year I should read, you know, I'll end up reading about 30 to 35 books. So that's like kind of the pace I try to be at. So it's just this process of reading as much as possible, both about copywriting and other subjects, and then also constantly working at it and writing and all that. So
nice. Cool. Appreciate you breaking that down. So going from these cold emails to actually having or like creating Honey Copy, the business that you have now, mm-hmm. like how did you go from that point to like putting more structure around it? Like, did it just naturally evolve over time as you got more clients, or did you like intentionally drive in that direction?
Yeah. So, I quickly realized, as awesome as like cold email can be, and there are literally multi-million dollar businesses out there that survive strictly off cold email. So 100% not bashing it, but being that it's been important to me to remain like a one person business. I realized, okay, like cold emailing only allows me to send one email to one person, right? So again, it's about replicating those results. And so I started writing 1 to 2 articles a week. So right now on Honey Copy's blog, I have upwards of 100 different articles, and each one of those articles is targeting like a specific search term or search phrase. So it's really been about building up the SEO on my site. And you know, this year I should have 500,000 to 600,000 people that visit my site. And one thing I tell people a lot is you need to remember that 90% of people who visit your site never return again. So once you get them on your site, make sure you're linking to an email opt-in page, and make sure the copy on that email opt-in page is converting really, really hard, and try to build up your email list as quickly as possible. Because I think like for any business, like the money is in the email list. I've just changed my process of going from like cold emailing to building out these really big articles, building up that email list, and then having sort of this pool of clients that I can prospective clients that I can constantly be marketing to. So that's allowed me to kind of create this cool little marketing machine that works for me. But the other thing I was going to say is that something that a lot of freelancers run into is you can charge more, but eventually you're going to hit a ceiling on how much you can charge. So you have two choices. You can either start hiring people underneath you, right? Which is a totally viable option. But the weakness, or not the weakness, but I would say the reason some people don't want to do that is because, let's say you're running a creative business. When you hire 10 people underneath you, you go from being the creative to a manager, you know? And so that was a big call I had early on, is I said, you know, I'm having enough business now to be able to hire a few people underneath me, but I love writing. I love being the voice behind the brand. I love handling all that. So I want to continue to do that. I don't want to be the manager. So the other option is you have to figure out how to become like this freelancer, entrepreneur hybrid, right? And that was sort of what I did in creating my copywriting course, which is $97. And the big sell there is that it's, you know, packed full of a ton of just resources and great insight into copy, but people can get through it literally in 1 to 2 hours. So it's not this massive course. It takes weeks and weeks. An entrepreneur can read it and begin applying the lessons in there, like in an afternoon. It's now I try to like build out the structure where products are making up 30% of it, and then services are making up another 70% of that revenue. So nice. Trying to break it down some. Yeah.
Cool. So diversifying those income streams that you've got. Cool.
For sure, man. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of been the goal this past year. So.
Nice. So with the, sounds like you're getting a, you know, substantial amount of traffic from the blog. Is that your lead generation machine? Is that how all your business from the service side is coming in now, or is there other stuff going on for lead gen as well?
Yeah, it's been 100% articles. This next year, I'm going to try to do a better job of getting on podcasts, because I think that's like a really great way to market yourself. And I think it's a very intimate conversation with the listener, you know, which is really, really cool. But yeah, it's been completely articles, man.
That's pretty impressive. So I told you just briefly before we started recording, you know, we have a creative agency as well. And, you know, our lead generation source is totally different than yours, right? We have no articles. We have no, really no SEO stuff going on in the background. So that's really cool to see that's working so well for you. Mm-hmm. What type of articles and things do you see perform the best?
Yeah, for sure. Quick question. Are you doing, is it more like word of mouth?
Ours is 100% referral right now.
I think that's so impressive too. Like when, you know, I love hearing about, I have a few clients that I work with where they've built 10-year business, they've been around for 10, 20 years and it's all been word of mouth. Like I am working with a client now who's been around for 25 years and they were like, we're just now investing in marketing, which to a degree is like, why aren't you guys investing in marketing? But there's, you know, I'm really impressed by businesses that can build themselves that way. That's like really badass. And it's a testament to like the services you're providing, you know? So.
Yeah. Cool. But I think that there's inherent danger in a single source approach. Like basically we both have almost single source approaches right now, which if something happened, like if one big influencer we work with says something bad, that could damage our reputation. Mm-hmm. If your website goes down, that could kill your lead flow. So it's like having single sources is not the best approach. So I think it's awesome that you're saying, you know, like getting out on podcasts and doing things like that to have other ways to get your name out there is super important.
Yeah. It's, you know, not just diversifying your income streams, but also your marketing, you know, so. For sure. But you asked about the articles, the ones that perform the best. You know, so I have, like I said, I have upwards of 100 on there. And the ones that I would say lead to the most, the ones that actually like result in leads and the ones that I tend to close are really the ones that take like a pretty strong opinion, you know? And also incorporate a really nice narrative within the article. So one thing I hate about a lot of the articles I'm seeing nowadays is they seem to be either listicles or sort of this, do this, this, and this versus like a overarching kind of view and stance and taking the reader kind of on this exploratory process through the article. So that's one thing I try to do different with the article is from the get-go, you know, I might be a little bit abrasive with how I write and edgy and obviously like take a stance. But I think someone gave me a compliment one time where they said, as a reader, they feel like I'm kind of this vulture that's circling in the sky. It's kill or whatever, like circling the topic over and over and over again. And they kind of said that like reading what I write feels like they're on that journey too of trying to discover their stance on it. So I think that the articles that have done really well for me tend to be the ones that obviously take a hard stance, but at the same time, like don't tell the reader at the end of the day, like you have to walk away with this piece of insight. You have to apply it like immediately, you know, like all the productivity hacks and stuff. I think people are kind of tired of reading that stuff. So those are some that do pretty well. Anything that like where I'm talking about my own experience, those do really, really well. So not just talking about like what John did, you know, and maybe like a failure he had or writing about Elon Musk, but actually like writing about my own experience, my own failures, maybe a email that worked really well for me, maybe one that didn't, speaking directly from my own experience does pretty well too.
Nice. So if we dive into some like the details of what one of these good performing articles does, like what are you seeing as far as like length, things like that, length, how are you picking like the long tail keyword phrase that you go after, some of that type of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely help there. So first and foremost, I use Ahrefs, but there's also SEMrush and there's a ton of different really great SEO softwares out there. But what I recommend people to do is always target keywords that are super, super low on competition. And generally those have exact monthly searches that fall between like 100 and maybe 1,000 monthly searches. So for example, like in the marketing world, if I were to try to write an article for how to build your email list, it would almost be impossible to rank for that keyword, right? Because there's such high competition. But if I were to go for more of a longer tail keyword, where, like, let's say it's how to build your email list as a real estate agent, instead of maybe having 10,000 monthly searches and being almost impossible to rank for, that might have 200 monthly searches and be really, really easy. So it's going after a longer tail, going after something with low competition. And it'll say all of this like within the software. It's super easy once you've spent a little time in there. And then from there, man, it's really just about writing a great article. I don't think it's about just packing the article full of keywords. What's really worked for me is writing a really quality 1,500 to 2,500 word article where I'm spending some good time on there. And really just trying to make sure the reader walks away with something valuable. And then something I noticed some websites don't do is you really need to be aware of like almost every article that you've written and make sure you're kind of creating like this spider web within your blog where you're interlinking your article to 3, 4, 5 different articles within your website. And it has to make sense, right? So like if you in that email list building, if you reference maybe how to write really strong how-to articles, making sure you're linking back to that article within your own website. Because Google measures SEO, and this is just from what I've read and really like from my own experience, they measure it by how long someone is on your site. So if you can get someone just bouncing around, so think of like Wikipedia, like you can literally spend hours on Wikipedia just going from page to page to page, kind of create that within your own blog and like your own site. So I really focus on that. Then as far as just like a structure goes, again, I'm going to go back to like headlines, but BuzzFeed's editor-in-chief will have all of their writers write 25 headlines for every single article. And the reason is he has like literally said that headlines for articles don't just improve clicks by like 10%. They've improved them as much as like 500%. So it has just a massive, massive impact on people opening the articles, like sharing them, all of that. So I recommend people take I call it kind of like the 20% rule. So if you're going to spend 5 hours on an article, 1 hour of that should 100% be writing out those headlines and choosing the best one. A lot of writers, what they'll fall into is they'll spend hours on this article and they'll sort of think, oh, I spent all this time on this article. It's awesome. People are going to want to read it. But the headline is like your billboard, right? For your article. So spend a ton of time on there because you have to remember a stranger has no idea that you spent a shit ton of time writing that article. You know, you really have to pull them in.
Yeah. Does that also apply to like the snippet? Like the...
Yeah. It definitely applies to that too. I mean, Medium now allows you to customize like that little snippet. So I think that's a great idea to do. Just go through that article and, you know, look for the hardest hitting sentence in there and like make that your snippet, you know? So yeah, I think that's huge in a way that they're like mini sort of Facebook ads, you know, so.
Yeah, super cool. Yeah. So what made you decide to get into the digital product side of things? Like when in this journey did you have that evolution where you were like, all right, I need to put something else out there, have another way to monetize this traffic coming to my site? And also to build off of that, when or how are you getting people to those products? Is it all organic?
Yeah. So that another good question. So I think service businesses miss sort of don't think of this a lot, but a lot of times service businesses have to be priced a little higher just because you're trading your time for like money, right? But when let's say you're like my projects generally start out at like the 5,000 mark. that's great, but there's sort of this, there's this massive gap between my free articles and my free newsletters, right? And a $5,000 project, right? There's a massive gap there. So what I realized was, there's people reading who might be a freelancer who isn't going to do a $5,000 project with me, but they would love to buy something from me. So what's something that I can price like in between there? And a really easy entry point to me was just like the $97 copywriting guide, where if someone doesn't want to work with me, or let's say someone doesn't have the budget to buy my, like hire me out to write a website for them, they can just buy the copywriting guide for $97. And I say, I kind of describe that as like the upside down pyramid, right? So like the first part of that, like an upside down pyramid, kind of the fat part near the base is sort of your newsletters, your marketing, right? And just the entry level free content that you're putting out there. For you, that would be like the podcasts. That next level down is kind of going to be that entry level product that you can sell them. So like a $97 copywriting guide or a $97 digital product. So you're making money on that, which is really nice. But what's going to happen is people are going to read that and be like, oh shit, this is really, really good. I want to hire him to do our website. And so it's kind of this funnel, right? So not just a funnel on getting people to buy a product, but I think we need to view like our products as funnels too. So you have your free product, then you have your entry level sort of $100, $250 product. Then you have like the big whopper of like, if you work with me, it'll be $5,000, but I'll, you know, do this killer thing for you, right?
Yeah.
So it's been, I viewed it as not only a machine, but also, like I said earlier, you know, you got to get out as a freelancer. If you want to make more money, you really have to stop trading your time for money, you know? And so that's why I built out the digital product. So
interesting. So I had a call with a copywriter. This was probably a week or two ago. And I was talking to him about a project that we have in our agency. And he was sharing with me a little bit about his pricing structure and how he takes percentages on a lot of his products, like equity in the, so he'll write, for example, he'll write a sales page for some company or some entrepreneur who's launching some maybe high ticket $1,000, $2,000 product. And I think he said he takes like 20 or 30% of the profit that comes from the sales on that page. And he'll always update it and revise it and modify it and all that kind of stuff. But I thought that was a pretty interesting pricing structure to implement. So I was curious if you've done anything like that in the past.
Actually, that's never been something I've done. It's something I'm very interested in. I just am still trying to figure out what that balance is of it being, you know, super fair to the client, but then also I'm not going to get burnt on my end from it too, you know? So like finding that balance, I know, I think that's really clever and really smart. I know there's a copywriter, he's kind of a ad man slash like copywriter. His name's Rick Bennett, I believe, but he's much older now, but he worked with a ton of like the startups in Silicon Valley. And he would actually take 1% of the company to work with them. So he would charge like quite a bit of money to work with them, but then also charge them or also like take equity in the company as he worked with them. So that's been something I've thought about exploring too down the road is, you know, as I grow as a copywriter, become better, have a nicer portfolio and all that good stuff. Maybe eventually getting to the point where I try to get a little bit of like tiny bit of equity in some of these startups. So I think I'm glad you brought that point up because I think there's some really clever ways freelancers can increase their income by doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where I was heading with that is there was actually three ways that he said he would price out because he's a freelancer copywriter, just like you. And he had three tiers. So he said, if he comes to somebody and say it's a $5,000 job, because I think that might be the number he threw out to me as well. I think it was. And he said he would give them three options. He'd be like, you can pay me $5,000 right now. You can pay me $2,500 a month for 3 months, or you can pay me nothing and I get 20% of all the profit that goes through this sales page.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. So Yeah, and that, I mean, those are all great options for like for a client to choose, you know. And I know there's clients out there that would just say, hey, we want to pay you the upfront cash. We want to keep yep. everything that we make, you know. So yeah, I love that. That's yeah. clever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is a lot of ways as like a freelancer, you can find like, and this goes like any business. I think getting in there and just like the more problems you can find and identify for that company and like you be the solution mm-hmm. to whatever that is, like as a freelancer, just starting out as an entrepreneur or even as a seasoned entrepreneur, like just identifying those problems mm-hmm. and then presenting a solution to them. Like in our agency, we always come in and we have like, they come to us for one reason, but right. most of the time what we present them is never just that one thing. We're yeah. like, we'll do this, but we also really think you should do this, and this. And yeah. then here's this big package where right. they originally only wanted this one thing.
Hell yeah. No, I love that. I actually was writing a sales page today. And at the bottom of the sales page, I wrote out a sort of newsletter opt-in sort of segment, and it was really compelling. But that's kind of been an upsell that I'll do with this client is say, hey, you know, if you like this sales page, remember a lot of the people who are going to land on it aren't going to buy, right? They're never going to return to the site. So let's try to collect some of those emails and put together a weekly newsletter that we can send to them. I think it would couple really nicely, you know? So I think you're really smart by doing that, by saying like, hey, you asked for this, but you probably should have B and C too. And one thing I've learned as a freelancer, man, you probably have experienced this too, is a lot of the clients who come to you, they don't necessarily know what they want, right?
They have no clue,
right? And that's why you kind of have to ask the three whys. Like they might come to you and say, we hate our landing page. And then you ask them, why do you hate your landing page? And they might say, well, you know, we don't really know why. And you can say, well, is it not converting? They might say, yeah, it's converting, but we don't really like the tone. So you don't hate your landing page. You hate your brand's tone, right? The written voice. Yeah. We really don't like our tone. So do you want me to work with you on improving the tone, or do you want me to work with you on the landing page? And so it can easily turn into multiple projects because you go from what originally was just a landing page to, hey, let's do an overhaul on the voice and the tone that we're putting out there. And hey, let's actually like improve that site wide versus just on this one landing page. So yeah, you kind of have to hold their hands a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it surprises me. And I think so me, I didn't tell you this, but it's been like 4 months or so since I quit my job to kind of go into this business full time. And we've worked with some really big like name entrepreneurs relative to their space and their niches and things like that. And sometimes I'm still blown away by how little some of these people seem to know, and they're super successful. And I think that's been one of the biggest things that I want to try to like share to people is like, you don't have to have everything figured out to like create something awesome, right? You just have to be willing to like keep moving forward and not give up, because that's all these people are doing. Even like the landing page example, like they just either hired it out or they mm-hmm. tried it and kept iterating on it. Mm-hmm. But it's just been fascinating to me to see that people that you think would have everything figured out really don't.
Oh man, not at all. And that's a great insight. It's like, I mean, I experienced that with what I'm building is, you know, my brother is in marketing too. And he does like more the paid ad side. And there's times I just feel stupid because I'm like, oh shit, I don't know anything about that side of marketing, you know? But I love that because it lets all of us off the hook a little bit. It just says, hey, you don't have to be really good at 10 things. You can be really good at one thing. And you can build a business out of it, you know, and down the road, you can hire other freelancers to help you sort of piece it all together. With like your services that you offer, have you found that a lot of your leads are coming from the podcast where you like might interview someone really, really impressive who might have like a large business and then they need like what your agency offers?
So I actually like with this podcast, I like I started doing more like solo content, but then I brought it back to doing interviews because I like talking to people like you. I like talking to people that are like maybe have big businesses. And what I realized is not even just speaking about people that come on my podcast, but podcasts in general, like if somebody's on a podcast, that means they see the value in podcast. Right? So if they see the value, then like having the percentage of them investing in that in another way. So a lot of people that come onto this podcast they're pitched to me by other booking agencies. So they're paying someone to do outreach to me to get on my podcast. So they're already investing in podcasting. So to me, those are leads, right? Those are people that see the value in the platform. They see the value in the communication medium. So it's like, it's not only just mine, but like I can go out to anyone that's been one of our clients. So actually while we were on this call, I just got a text message from a guy and we landed him because he was on another one of our clients' podcast. So I was like, I've never heard of this dude before. Added him on LinkedIn, shot him a message. He was like, great timing, man. I want to start a podcast. Cool. Now we're launching his podcast for him. So
that
like
is badass. Yeah.
Like people that are doing whatever it is, it doesn't have to be podcasting. If people are doing that and they see the value in whatever that is, it's like it's a warm lead and they don't even know they're a lead.
It is a warm lead, man. No, you're exactly right. That's really cool.
Yeah. Cool, man. So what do you think has been the biggest like takeaway you've had in like growing your business, selling your services, like any like big like epiphanies that really like changed the game for you? Anything stand out?
Yeah. That's so I think 100% do not want to bash metrics and data analytics. Like I think there's a place for all of that. But one thing I'm finding in marketing and one thing I've noticed for my own brand that's really set me apart is finding like the really little gems, right? I kind of compare it to the Happy Meal, right? Where you, like, as a kid, when you would open up your Happy Meal, yeah, it was tasty. It tasted really good. But what was really cool was having that little toy in there. Same with, like, the cereal boxes. So what has been, I think, a game changer for me in marketing is I've always, whether I've been building out Honeycopy, the creative writing business too, like, I just released a book on poetry and creative writing and prowse and all that. I've always tried to remember that, like adding in that little gem, that sort of surprising thing that someone didn't expect. Because I think that for people, we're so used to nowadays, like you're so used to seeing the same email subject lines come through, you know, the same boring shit, the same marketing that's hitting you. And we're losing a little bit of that human element, that refreshing sort of surprising, element, you know? So I try to always add that into all of my marketing. Like for example, with I can show you here. Like with my book, I put a page full of like koi fish on it. Do you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like just in the back of the book, I put like a page full of koi fish because I thought, you know, one of the most surprising and interesting things to me is when I'm like, no matter where you're at, whether you're 7 years old or 5 years old, if you stumble upon a pond full of koi fish, you stop and you look and you're like, oh wow, that's really cool. You know, these crazy orange beasts just swimming around in the waters. Like you have to stop and stare. And so I thought, huh, you know, if that's like interesting to me in real life, like the last thing that a reader is going to expect is to stumble upon a page full of koi fish, you know? So it's just finding those elements within my marketing, whether it's in emails or the newsletter, like on my newsletter, instead of using pictures, I use these vintage black and white GIFs, right? That are from like, that look like they're from footage from the 1900s. And that just like sets you apart. So that's one thing I try to recommend to people is even if you run a service business, if once the project's complete, send your client like something really cool and small, like a little gem that just can sort of be that happy meal toy, you know, at the end of the meal. So.
Yeah, we send all of our clients, so we do podcast stuff. So we send them all coffee cups with their podcast cover art, like printed on the coffee cup. So
I love that. I love that. It's just the extra shit, man. Like as a, when someone spends however much money, like to work with you, I think it's that type of stuff that they remember. Of course they want like a killer podcast. They want the results, but they don't expect to receive a coffee mug with like their podcast thing on it. You know, they expect a service. So it's just surprising people. I think that's surprising people and being thoughtful, you know?
Yeah. And another thing that we did. And so we have one client, he's probably the client we've made the most money off of, as far as like, we added up all his monthly retainers. And so we bought him like a big piece of art off that site, Iconic, that has all the, so we bought him a big piece of art and just shipped it to his house. And then like 2 weeks later, I was like, hey dude, did you get a package? He was like, a package of what? I was like a picture or anything. And he was like, was that you guys that sent that? And I was like, yeah, well, like, I mean, that was cool. But the part that I think was really cool about it was like, we continued the conversation right there. And he told us that like that week he was letting go of pretty much like every other agency that he was working with to like restructure things on his side. So like, you never know like what's going on in like your client's businesses or their life or whatever the situation is. And like when you can plant that seed that sets you apart and is just kind of like, builds that relationship in a different way other than like, okay, I give you money, you give me service. Like if you can do something outside of the box and nice for them, even if it is a random coffee mug or a pitcher, like it sets you apart. And I don't think he was going to get rid of us, but he may have been like, I'm going to fire everybody. And that pitcher could have just saved us some business. I don't know.
No, man, you're exactly right. And I love that. Like that's unexpected for him. Like I was working with, a client a few months back redoing his website. He's a really prominent podcaster, and he's been a huge CEO at some public companies. And so he has plenty of money to like pay me what he needs to pay me on my projects. But I got to the end of his website build out, and I loved working with him so much that I was like, you know what? He's like been just a fucking gem to work with. I'm gonna give him like a $500 discount on this project. And I just added it in. So when he opened up the invoice, it went from 5,000 down to 4,500. And man, like he just really, really appreciated it. And like the next week, I didn't do this for this, but the next week he introduced me to another client just saying like, hey, this kid did some really good work for me. I really dig him. Like, I'd love to pass him off to you. And so I think that when you're thoughtful and you do some surprising things for your clients, I think it does sort of what your agency has done so well, and that it garners that word of mouth, you know, and I think that's some of the best marketing. It's free, you know, in a lot of ways, unless you're giving a $500 discount.
then it costs a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. So I know you've sold a good many of your copywriting guides, so it must be good. If somebody's interested in, you know, just the skill of copywriting, learning more about it, like where could they go pick up a copy of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So if they just go to www.honeycopy.com, in the far right hand corner, they can't miss it. It's just this big sort of copy that just reads copywriting course, and they can click on it and read about it and all that good stuff. But if you don't have $97 to spend or don't feel like it, on that same site, you can just go to my newsletter. It's just hit the button that says subscribe. And I send out some really good insight each week on that. Like a lot of people, that's something I'm probably most proud of. So I send out a newsletter each week full of just all kinds of like lessons, and whether it's with marketing or entrepreneurship or freelancing or just life in general. And people have seemed to dig that too. So
that's awesome, Cole. Well, I appreciate you coming on here, man, sharing your journey, ad agency, pulling up carpet, starting Honey Coffee, crushing it with that, working with some awesome people. It was really cool to hear about your journey, man, and sharing some of the insight. I really appreciate it. If you guys are out there listening right now, head over to honeycopy.com. You know, sign up for his newsletter. I'm about to do that right now because I could definitely use some help in the copywriting realm. So I appreciate that. Looking forward to it. And Cole, it's been real, man. Thanks.
It's It's been awesome. Really appreciate it, man.
All right. Talk soon.
Peace, brother.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So, if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.